ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're continuing Maitreya speaking to Vidura, Maitreya Muni. And we're on text 46. This is a chapter, The Activities of the Prachetas. Basma sakriyamanamscha. Oops. It's tan. Basma sakriyamanam stan. Truman viksha pitamaha. Agata shayama saya samayan asa. Putran bahishmato nayai. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After seeing all the trees on the surface of the earth were being turned to ashes, Lord Brahma immediately came to the sons of King Bahishman and pacified them with words and logic. Purport. Whenever there is some uncommon occurrences on any planet, Lord Brahma, being in charge of the whole universe, immediately comes to control the situation. Lord Brahma also came when Hiranyakashipu underwent severe penances and austerities and made the whole world tremble. A responsible man in any establishment is always alert to keep peace and harmony within that establishment. Similarly, Lord Brahma is also allowed to keep peace and harmony within this universe. He consequently pacified the sons of King Bahishman with good logic. So I used this verse the other day to talk about dispute resolution amongst Vaishnavas, so I figured I'd better not talk about that again, because some people might say I'm just prejudiced to the subject that I'm interested in. So instead, we'll pick up on another aspect of the same point that's being made here in the purport, and that is about Lord Brahma's sense of responsibility. Another word for that would be a sense of duty. And as we know, duty and responsibility are important words in Krishna consciousness. Two things kind of came to my mind when I first thought about this. Because sometimes we have a question, what is our duty? So when I was joining ISKCON, and at that time I left my university studies a bit prematurely. I still had a year and a half to go. And my mother wasn't very happy with that. My mother, I come from a Jewish background, and as we find here in most communities in India, and also in the Jewish faith, the Jewish community rather, there's a very strong emphasis on education. Going to the best university and getting as many degrees as you can, especially, generally speaking, most Jewish people have a choice of being either a doctor or a lawyer. Those are the two choices. There's not much of a third choice. So I was on my way to becoming a lawyer. And when I decided to give up my university studies to become a devotee, my mother said that if I did that, she would commit suicide. True story. No, she said she would commit suicide. And, of course, if you know anything about the Jewish faith, there's something called a Jewish guilt trip. And that's what my mother was doing. She actually never did commit suicide. As a matter of fact, she lived another 28 years, and she left her body in Sri Vrindavan Dham. So she came a long way from deciding to commit suicide because I was a devotee to leaving her body in Vrindavan. And it was actually when I told the temple president, of course things are a little different now than then, so don't, you know, necessarily compare. But when I told the temple president that my mother was going to commit suicide if I became a devotee, he said, "Very good." He said, "She'll leave her body thinking of Krishna." But anyway, she didn't commit suicide. But I did have a decision to make about what was my duty at that time. And then I had another interesting kind of flashback just yesterday when His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was giving the morning class. And it ties in with this theme of duty. And that is that it was Saturday morning. Right? Yesterday was Saturday?
Right.
And the class went on till about 10 o'clock. Right? So my conditioning is, and I know, you know, things are very different, but from growing up in ISKCON in the 70s in America, my conditioning was Saturday meant what we called Maha Saturday. And that was the best time to distribute books. And because everyone, especially Saturday morning, many people in America, they work Monday through Friday, and then they shop until they shop. And they try to get to the shops early in the morning on Saturday. So I could just remember from, you know, my early days as a devotee that Saturday morning, you know, the Bhagavatam class has to end early. And prasadam has to be on time because we have to run to our vans and jump in them and get to our sangirtan spots and start distributing books. So that sense of, even though I've been living in India for 15 years now, and I don't spend Saturdays in that way anymore. Still, I guess because I was in a city situation yesterday and a temple that has so much emphasis on preaching, I started feeling this anxiety looking at the clock. And saying, you know, I mean, this is a wonderful class, but we have to go on sangirtan. You know? So that sense of duty was a little different, you know, in the first story about what's my duty, should I pacify my mother, should I join Krishna consciousness? And then we also have a certain sense of duty as we become devotees. So first let's talk about duty in a general sense, the way Krishna speaks about it in the Bhagavad Gita. It's actually the, you could say almost like the pratishtha or the basis of the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? It's the basis upon which Krishna develops his more advanced arguments or presentations about devotional service, about bhakti. And we're enjoined there to do something because it's meant to be done. We're not yet talking exclusively about Krishna consciousness. We'll get to that. But right now, just the idea of doing something because it's meant to be done. Karma nevari karaste ma phaleshu kadachana. Krishna says, right, that you have a right to perform your prescribed duty. That you have, he uses this word adhikar, karman evadi, adhikar, your right. And he tells Arjuna his right is to perform karma. Karman evadi karaste, certainly. You know how people like to quote this especially in our India, right? Everyone knows this shloka, at least this first line, right? Karma nevari karaste. Not so many people quote the next line. Ma phaleshu kadachana, right? But you should not be attached to the fruits. You're not, or as Prabhupada translates, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. So this is this idea of dispassionate, proper duty, whose performance, just doing that duty, is our own reward. Right? That idea of just, my reward is that I get to do this duty. That is going away very quickly from modern man. It's still here, Much more, I find, in India than practically anywhere else in the world. And going rapidly, especially in the metros. Right? Just the idea that I'm, you know, Shastra says, or my, you know, just my culture says, or my family tradition says, this is my duty to perform. It's my pleasure to do that just because it's meant to be done. Not because I'm going to get some fruits. And certainly not that, oh, I'm supposed to do this, but, you know, I'd really rather not. And let me make up 101 excuses not to do that duty. So this is the mode of goodness. Right? The mode of passion is we want some fruit, and the mode of ignorance is we want to avoid. So this is a good starting point, actually. We do something dispassionately, with the reward being that I get to do it. And Prabhupada mentions in that purport to that verse. Anyone know what chapter and verse that is? The number? Anyone know what chapter? Anyone know what book? Bhagavad Gita? The book. 2, yes. 47. 48, I'm also going to quote 48 in a second, so you just read my mind. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, Arjuna was therefore advised by the Lord to fight as a matter of duty, without attachment to the results. His non-participation in the battle is another side of attachment. So we're attached to the fruit, that's a kind of attachment, and avoiding our duty is a different kind of attachment. Such attachment never leads to the path of salvation. Any attachment, positive or negative, is the cause of bondage. And listen to this, inaction is sinful. Isn't that interesting? One of the definitions of sin is to not do one's duty. There's different concepts we have of sins, right? Like before regular. One of them is to neglect one's duty. In Bhagavad Gita, that's sinful. Inaction is sinful. Therefore, Prabhupada concludes, fighting as a matter of duty was the only auspicious path of salvation for Arjuna. And then the next verse Krishna says, verse 48, perform your duty equipoised, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. And Prabhupada writes at the end of the purport, therefore Krishna tells Arjuna not to renounce work. But what should he renounce instead? The fruits of work. So we don't renounce work. It's a little subtle. Don't renounce work, but renounce our attachment to the results of work. And this is discussed in the Yoga Ladder. Now, I'm probably going to do something a little unique, a little unusual. I don't know how many devotees who give class here get down from the asana and write on the board, but because my nature is to be a teacher, I'm going to do that, and I take your permission. Is that okay, Radha Gopinath? Is that all right? Okay, because you're the in charge. So I put my duty of doing this on you. And I'm just going to write. Three steps in the Yoga Ladder. In the first 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the Yoga Ladder. There's things, maybe I should have done it the other way, because the Yoga Ladder should be going up. But I'm a little backwards myself. The Yoga Ladder begins with someone just being a dvipada pashu, right? A two-legged animal, just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And that's not considered human life. And then if one comes in contact with the Vedic literature, this is the traditional Yoga Ladder, not the one necessarily we strictly practice here in Krishna consciousness. But anyway, one can come in touch with the Karma Kanda idea that if I perform this yajna, if I do this sacrifice, I'll get some enjoyment in this world. And that's a better way to enjoy than just, you know, going to the disco on a Saturday night or something like that. And then, as one progresses and one becomes a devotee, I'm skipping, I'm not going to explain the whole yoga ladder, that's another class. But there's three basic, there's three ways as we're choosing, we choose to become devotees. But we can practice at different levels. And this is one way of describing the different levels. There's different ways, as we also know, ado, shraddha, tata, sadhu, sangha, bhajana, kriya, narta, nivritti. But this is another way. And this is interesting, especially for us as to understand and assess our own level of Krishna consciousness and to help other people progress in Krishna consciousness. So in this, when we understand karma yoga, yoga means we understand the goal. And in this case, as devotees, we understand the goal is Krishna. But sakam, we have some material desires, some kam, some material desires. Sa means with, right? So with material desires. And generally that means we're attached to two things. We're attached to the fruit of our actions to some extent, and we're attached to the kind of activities we do. Okay? Now, if someone's like this and is a devotee of Krishna, that's not, it's not bad. It's the level that they're at. Such a person should not be living in the brahmachari ashram. Right? Because if someone's attached to the fruits of work, it's not good that they, you know, if we go out on Sangirtan and we collect 100 rupees and, you know, one for Krishna, two for me, you know, that creates a not a very proper atmosphere for a temple. But such a person remains in there, can remain in their position, stane stita shritikatam tanubhagmanobir, and advance in Krishna consciousness. Now, the nishkam is a person who's not attached to the fruit. But they're still, they like to do this service for Krishna and not that. I'll do pujari seva, but don't ask me to, you know, go in the bus on traveling sankirtan, for example, right? So it's a little, you know, a little, but they're not attached to the fruit. They'll live very simply. So such a person can often live in a brahmachari ashram, but they're a little picky. Like when I was a child, even though I said I was from a Jewish background, during Christmas time, people give chocolates. They give boxes of chocolates in the West, right, as gifts. And usually the chocolates are these little, they're little pieces about this big, and they're wrapped in, they come in a little paper wrapper. You can see the top, but you can't see the bottom, if that makes any sense. And there's different varieties. Usually there's two varieties. I should give this class after next Mayapur, because in next Mayapur there's a GBC proposal to stop the ban on chocolate. So if that passes, this class will have more relevance. But anyway, so there was dark chocolate and white chocolate, light chocolate. And I didn't like the dark chocolate, right? And neither did my brother. But no, I didn't like the dark chocolate, and neither did my brother. We both liked the white chocolate. So you would see at the end of the day that all the light chocolate was gone and all the dark chocolate remained. Right? So sometimes we're a little bit like that in devotional service. Right? I'll do this for Krishna, and I'll do that for Krishna. But, right? And then bhakti yoga is whatever I'm asked to do for Krishna, I'll do it. And these are actually described in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says, yad kurosi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, dadasi, yad. Where he says, whatever you're going to do something, do it for me. Whatever activities that you're going to perform, you're going to perform them anyway, do them for me. That's compared to nishkam karma yoga. Or you're going to one of the two karma yogas. You're going to do an activity, but offer some of that fruit or even all of that fruit to me. But the verse before that is bhakti yoga. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhakte prachati. That Krishna says, I want this. And you say, yes, sir. And Krishna doesn't make it so hard. He asks for a leaf, a flower. It's in the singular. If you study the Sanskrit, it's a leaf, a flower, some water. So he makes it easy. But that's bhakti yoga. Krishna tells us what he wants, we do it. And of course that comes down, Krishna's order, you know, so Radha Gopinath may not be speaking to you directly, but that order comes down in the cyclic succession. So when we follow the spiritual master's instructions and our different authorities, our counselors, etc., then we're practicing bhakti yoga. So that's a little description. Okay, let's go on a little bit more about duties in Krishna consciousness. And I'll read a part of a famous purport from the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. No, from the ninth chapter. The word sudarachara used in this verse is very significant, and we should understand it properly. When a living entity is conditioned, that's us, he has two kinds of activities. One is conditional and one is constitutional. As for protecting the body or abiding by the rules of society and the state, certainly there are different activities, even for devotees, in connection with the conditional life. And such activities are called conditional. Okay, so we have a body. So that means basically we still have to, we have some connection to this world. So we have to follow the rules of this world. As Prabhupada says here, we have to follow the laws, be law-abiding citizens. It's not very good to say, oh, I'm a devotee, I don't have to pay taxes. I'm a devotee, We used to be a little bit more like that in the earlier days, and we got ourselves in trouble. We got ourselves in trouble thinking ourselves a little prematurely transcendental. I remember we used to... little things we used to do, like when we were on traveling Sangatan. I spent 12 years of my life basically in a van driving around America. And sometimes we would get into a traffic jam. And you don't find so much here, except maybe on the Mumbai-Pune road. There's what they call a shoulder on the road. You're not supposed to drive in that shoulder. It's the area off the highway. But we used to call it the Sankirtan Express Lane. And when there was a big traffic jam, we thought, well, this is for Lord Chaitanya, And sometimes the police didn't appreciate that very much. And of course, sometimes there is a very advanced devotee. Anyway, we shouldn't do like that. But I can tell you a nice little story about an advanced devotee who got away with it a little. Well, actually, yeah. Anyway, many of us have heard of Jayananda Prabhu. Maybe you've even heard this story. But it's so nice, I'll repeat it again. When does class end, by the way? Because, I know you don't want to listen to me as long as you'd like to listen to Maharaj, so... No, I know. So now 9 o'clock? Okay. So Jayananda Prabhu was an extremely advanced devotee, very dedicated. He was so surrendered to Srila Prabhupada. And he gave the money for the... It wasn't the Krishna book, because that was George Harrison. Nectar of Devotion, yes. He gave the practically his life savings to Srila Prabhupada to $5,000, I believe it was, which was a lot of money at that time, for Srila Prabhupada to print the Nectar of Devotion. So anyway, he couldn't imagine spending any of Krishna's money on himself. He just couldn't. It just didn't, he just couldn't imagine. So he went into for any of you who have been to America, you probably know about Kmarts. I think I've been to almost every Kmart in America, not as a shopper, but as a Sankirtan devotee. We stayed in the parking lot. We didn't go inside. But anyway, so he went to a Kmart, and he needed a pair of pants to do his work. And he couldn't imagine paying for it. So he went in. Anyway, I don't know what he exactly did, but he tried to steal the pants, and he was caught. And there was a court case for him stealing his pants. So he went to the court, and he decided he didn't need a lawyer. He would just explain what happened. So he was brought to the court, and they were brought to the stand, and he was promised that he would tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And then he just explained that, he said, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to, offend Kmart, but I just couldn't imagine using any of Krishna's money for my own purposes. And as he was speaking, the policeman who caught him and who was there stood up and he said, "Your Honor," he approached the judge and said, "I'll pay for the pair of pants. Please just let him go." And Jayananda was let off the hook. But when we've come to the level of Jayananda Prabhu, then we can do something like that. He was a great devotee. Early 1977, he contacted leukemia. But before that, he had done so much service for Srila Prabhupada. But then in the later years, his great service was Rath Yatra. And actually, I'm personally indebted to him for Rath Yatra because he organized the Rath Yatra card in New York in 1976. And that was the one and only time I got to see Srila Prabhupada, 1976 at Rath Yatra. So he organized the Rath Yatra in 1976 there. And then even though he had leukemia and was very sick, he organized the first Rath Yatra in Venice Beach in California. And then he became very, very ill. And right at Mangal Artik, as the conch shell to end Mangal Artik blew, the pujari came to his room bringing Rukshishi Rukmini Dwarkadisha's garland. They put it on him. And with his he had a tape of Srila Prabhupada playing. This is a little off the subject, but to glorify Jayananda is ecstatic. He had a tape of Srila Prabhupada playing. The pujari garlanded him, and with his last ounce of energy, he put his head right on top of the tape player, his ear. So and just after hearing one of Srila Prabhupada's Maha Mantras, he left this world. And so the devotees went to Srila Prabhupada wasn't there in Los Angeles at the time, and when the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada what happened to him, at first Prabhupada gave the general answer that, you know, if he was freed from material desires, then he would go back to Godhead, and if he still had some material desires, he would come back Suchinam Shimantam Gehe in a very, very pious family to continue his. But then when they told him how he passed, and how with his last ounce of energy, then Prabhupada became very sober, and his eyes kind of like, you know, went like this, you know, and it was almost like he was scanning the universe, you know. And then he said, he has gone back home, back to Godhead. Shriman Jayananda Prabhu ki jai. So anyway, for us normal conditioned souls, we can't necessarily go to shops and start stealing pants and use the Sankirtan express lane and things like that. Generally, our preaching, part of our preaching is to be good citizens of the country that we're in. And actually, Srila Prabhupada even told us about that, about Gurukula. He said that the children should be trained up to be first-class citizens in society. So, Prabhupada continues. Besides these, referring to these different conditional activities, besides these, the living entity is fully conscious of his spiritual nature and is engaged in Krishna consciousness or the devotional service of the Lord, has activities that are called transcendental. Such activities are performed in his constitutional position, and they are technically called devotional service. So like we heard last night, our constitution, Jivara Surup, Surupa Hoya Krishna Nitya Das. Our Surup, our constitution is Nitya Krishna Das, that we're Krishna's servant. Now listen to this. This is Prabhupada speaking very practically here. Now, in the conditioned state, sometimes devotional service and the conditional service in relation to the body will parallel one another. Isn't it? Right? Like for example, we should take care of our health. Right? I mean, if a non-devotee should take care of their health, a devotee should take care of their health. It parallels one another. Right? Like with all those times on traveling Sankirtan, we didn't eat very well. We usually ate raisins and peanuts or things. Or we used to have competitions. Who can spend the least amount of money on boga? Right? So we'd have just, you know, cabbage and potatoes day in and day out. You know, we didn't want to spend any of Krishna's money. And following the footsteps of Jayananda, at least we paid for the potatoes and the cabbage, but we didn't pay very much. But anyway, so when conditional life and constitutional life parallel one another, that's easy, right? That's easy. Mm-hmm. But then again, sometimes these activities become opposed to one another. As far as possible, a devotee is very cautious that he does not do anything that could disrupt his wholesome condition. He knows that the perfection of his activities depends on the progressive realization of Krishna consciousness. So I had to decide, when my mother said she would commit suicide if I would become a devotee, I had to decide. And I remember this. Now, I don't know if I interpreted this right, but this helped me. That yes, I didn't want to disappoint my mother. I actually liked my mother. I even then, I liked my mother, quite a bit. I had a good relationship with her. But I just felt that, her blocking me from being a devotee or not wanting me to be a devotee, it was too much on the conditional side. And I had to take shelter of who I really was. This is a golden opportunity, it's so rare to get a human form of life. We hear about the rarity. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about the rarity in such a extreme way. He talks about the rarity of devotional service compared to if a turtle is in a vast ocean and there's one block, there's one log in that entire ocean, and that one log has one hole about this big. And the chances of the turtle surfacing and sticking his head through that hole in the log, that's the rarity of devotional service in the human form of life. So I had to make a choice. And we also have to make some choices. Actually, we're faced with choices at every moment. And sometimes our choices are between Maya and Krishna. And our advancement in Krishna consciousness is based on making the right choices. So, now let's examine this just a little bit more based on Rupa Goswami's definition in the Nectar, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He said that famous verse, because we want to become pure devotees, right? We want to practice pure devotional service. So he defines it so nicely. Anya abhilasita shunyam. Anya means other, right? Abhilas, desires. Sunyam means what, as Prabhupada would say in his Bengali, jiro, right? His Bengali accent, jiro. This word, this little Sanskrit sita is actually interesting. Anya abhilas sita. It means in your general consciousness. Because sometimes, like for example, you get in a car, the car looks like it's about to hit you, right? And you might not remember Krishna for that moment, right? So that's an unusual situation. But in general situations, anya vilasita, right? We might start thinking, oh, what about my family? But Rupa Goswami makes it clear that at least in general situations, anya abhilasita sunyam, we should have no other desires. We became pretty accustomed to chanting Hare Krishna in car accidents because we were driving so much. We would drive 70,000 miles a year, usually on Sangirtan. We would just crisscross America. So we had a lot of close calls. So, we became pretty accustomed to Hare Krishna, even if we were asleep in the back of the van, doing that at any notice. Although I remember I had one devotee, one Sankirtan partner, whenever that would happen, he'd go, Jesus Christ! His previous commissioner. That's also good, calling out the name of the Lord's pure devotee. So anyway, the first line wasn't even what I wanted to talk about. Anyabhilasita sunyam, jnana karma adi anavritam. So this word anavritam is very significant. Anavritam means to cover. So our bhakti should not be covered by karma or jnana, and adi means yoga, etc. And the example that's given by Srila Rupa Goswami is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performing the Shraddha ceremony for his father. Now we might think, Shraddha ceremony? What does that have to do with pure devotional service? So the explanation is given that if we think I have to perform the Shraddha ceremony for my father, because if I don't, he'll be in great difficulty. Right? Then that is considered avritam. That it covers our bhakti, because we should understand. I'm trying to practice devotional service. By that devotional service, not just my father, so many generations are benefited. All I need is to do is practice devotional service. But if I do the Shraddha ceremony thinking this will pacify my family, I know all I need to do is go there and chant Hare Krishna. That's all that's necessary. But if I perform this, it'll satisfy my parents. They will think good about Krishna consciousness. It'll satisfy my family. But as far as my faith, no, I understand. What's that verse? Suridha Nishchaya? No? That the firm faith in Krishna consciousness? Anyone know? Anyway, it's quoted in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in the verse 41, where the point is that we just need to have faith in Krishna consciousness. The Bhagavad Gita shloka, in the purport, is quoted. It's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yes, Shraddha Shabda Vishwas Sridai Nishchaya Sarva Karma Kripto Haya. But just by practicing Krishna consciousness, everything's taken care of. So we can sometimes do. So we may practice, we may karma again, as long as it doesn't cover our bhakti, then it necessarily doesn't ruin our pure devotional service. But the second it covers our faith, or covers our desire to be Krishna's pure devotee, and then there's big trouble. So we may have some duties to perform in this world, but we should try to align our duties so they don't cover our devotional service. Is that clear? Can I go on to the next point then? All right. So, and some responsibilities have to be given up. Here's a good example. You might say, wait a second, that sounds pretty heavy. Well, here's a pretty good example, I think, of a responsibility none of us should be attached to. This is Prabhupada speaking. He says, yes, there is a story in Bhagavat that Indra was cursed to become a pig. So after some time, or a hog, or what did Maharaj call it yesterday? A boar, yes. So after some time, there was mismanagement in the heavenly planet, heavenly kingdom. Brahma personally came. Indra, anyway, you became a pig. Now you come with me. Indra said, huh? How can I go? I have got so much responsibility here. So those kind of responsibilities, you know, because he said, I have my pig wife and my piglets, and I have so many how can I go to the heavenly kingdom? I have so many responsibilities here. So some responsibilities do have to be given up. And then we have to develop our Krishna consciousness. Just like even duties in Krishna consciousness should be performed properly. In the 8th chapter of Gita, Krishna says, Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mam anusmara yudyacha. Very significant. He says, mam anusmara, remember me. Then do your duty. In Arjuna's case, it was yudya, it was to fight. And the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that this word cha means first anusmara, then yudya. So our remembrance of Krishna is, in one sense, our prime duty. What's the verse about always remembering Krishna? How does it begin? Smartavya satatam Vishnu vismartavya najatuchit sarva vidhi nisedhasur etayar eva kinkaram. That we should always, the essence of sadhana bhakti is to always remember Krishna and never forget him. And then sarva, all the vidhis, all the dues, putting on tilak, doing this, doing that, all the things we're supposed to do, and all the nishedas, all the things we're supposed to reject, are kinkaras, they're servants of this principle. To always remember Krishna, and to never forget him. And then that culminates, here we're talking about duty, in the verse 8, Tavan Sankhya Yogabhyam Swadharma. This is what we're talking about a lot, right? Right, Swadharma. Parinishtaya Jamma Labdha Parapunsam Ante Narayana Smriti. The highest perfection of human life, achieved by either complete knowledge of matter and spirit, that means Gyan, by acquiring mystic yoga mystic powers, or by perfect discharge of one's occupational duties, karma, is to remember Narayan, the personality of Godhead, at the end of life. Okay, so then I'm going to just end by talking about now how we take what we've talked about, duties, responsibilities, now let's bring it into our practical life in ISKCON. Yesterday morning, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was glorifying His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj, if you remember. He told that story about how management was so important, right? And prior to that, he glorified Giriraj Maharaj by saying that Prabhupada had so much faith in him, and gave him, and based on that faith in him and that trust in him, he gave him so much responsibility. So that is so important in any mission, and especially in a mission like ISKCON. And Prabhupada wrote, and this is way back in 1967, he was talking about the early days, and he said Mukunda, referring now to His Holiness Mukunda Maharaj, at that time, he was a friend. Right? If you read the Leelamrita, it wasn't that Mukunda Maharaj was always this fixed, you know. He was a friend, but there was no responsibility for him for maintaining the center. So in other words, he hadn't taken any responsibility. Gradually, Kirtananda and Hayagriva joined, but they also did not take responsibility. So Prabhupada was basically saying, everything was on his head. And we hear, right, how he would invite everyone to the Sunday feast, he would cook the Sunday feast, he would serve the Sunday feast, and amazingly enough, he would clean up after the Sunday feast. Because everyone would come and go, and they hadn't taken responsibility. And then in the Nectar of Devotion it says that any person who is reliable in all circumstances is called dependable. So it's incumbent upon us to become dependable servants of our spiritual master, of Srila Prabhupada, of Prabhupada's mission, of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. Dependable servants. It's very important. This is how Krishna consciousness spreads. When we make that, when we have that committed nature, and there's so many devotees. I was, the night before last, I had the great fortune to go to Mahaprabhu Prabhu's program at his house. And there's an example of a committed person. You can rely on Mahaprabhu 110%. Isn't it? He's a completely dependable devotee, fixed in service. His whole life is service. His son's whole life is service. His wife, you know, the whole family's whole life is dependable service. And therefore, such a person can be given so much responsibility. Responsibility is not a burden, it's an honor. It's a great honor. And a devotee, think of the responsibility Srila Prabhupada had, practically speaking, the singular responsibility to continue the Gaudiya Sampradaya, practically speaking, or at least develop it all over the world. It's such a heavy responsibility. So he's taken practically the responsibility of the world on, and it'd be so nice if we can take some of that responsibility on our head. Just like, and you know, of course, I'm not talking about myself, but you know, we had that little yesterday, Saturday morning, that, you know, just remembering that sense of responsibility. We have to distribute books. We have to maintain the temple. It's Saturday morning. What's going on? Right? And it's a very important thing that we can be real instruments in the hands of our spiritual master when we become 100% dependable. We're not swayed by our senses going here and there or this and that, but or even if they do sway a little here and there, that they're not, they come, they go, but we're fixed. Vyavasayat nikabudhir ekeha. And in that purport, Prabhupada mentions, oh, I wish I had brought the actual translation by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, because Prabhupada says the purport of that verse is what inspired him to come to the West. When he read the purport of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, on this verse, 241. That's what inspired him. I'm sure you all know this. And then in the actual translation, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about how the material universe may stay or it may be dissolved. This world may come or it may go. Tragedies may hit me left and right, but I'm not moving one inch from my determination to serve my spiritual master. And it was that determination that brought Prabhupada to the West. And that determination didn't stop with Prabhupada. It's passed down through disciplic succession. And ISKCON is going to prosper as long as that sense of transcendental responsibility and determination goes on generation and generation and generation. I'll just read a few little... As such, everyone should always feel the responsibility that Krishna wants us to do something for him, Prabhupada's saying. And we must invest all of our energy to fulfill this mission of Krishna consciousness. And just two more. So far responsibility is concerned, there is an action in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Prabhupada speaking, to be executed by the devotee, which is called Krishna Arte Akila Chesta, which means to take all kinds of responsibilities for Krishna's sake. Sometimes, now Prabhupada speaking, sometimes I also think that let me go back to Vrindavan. So Prabhupada's in the West, and he's revealing his mind. Sometimes I also think, let me go back to Vrindavan. In that peaceful situation, to live without any responsibilities. Still in this old age, I take responsibility for managing our quite big institution now. And I have to reply so many letters from different centers and give them so many instructions. As an old man, I can take relief from this work immediately. But for Krishna's sake, I am pulling on, even though there is sometimes personal inconveniences. So let us act in that way, all together, for Krishna's sake. Just think, my favorite, the most inspiration I get of a picture of Prabhupada is just envisioning in my mind, or they have the diorama in Vrindavan, of Prabhupada walking on the Jaladutta. Just imagine, that is the pinnacle of compassion and of taking responsibility. 69 years old. No idea what he's got. 40 rupees in his pocket. That is the most bold act I think anyone's ever performed in this age. To walk on the Jaladutta at the age of 69 with the name of somebody. Who had ever heard of Butler, Pennsylvania? I never heard of Butler, Pennsylvania until I became a devotee. So he took so much responsibility. So it's definitely our duty to take responsibility. And the last quote I'm going to end is passing the responsibility onto all of you and taking it off of my shoulders. It is the duty of every responsible Indian to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the world, to do all the supermost good, as well as to bring about the desired peace in this world. Because India has failed in her duty by neglecting this responsible work, there is so much quarrel and trouble in this world. So especially those born in Bharat Bhumi has such, you know, Lord Chaitanya has given that responsibility to live with this world. Any questions or comments? Radha Gopinath Prabhu?
I had this question long back and continues still about duties being avoided, or we said one is in the mode of passion, perform duties, and then there is in the mode of goodness, certain duties are, I mean, certain passionate activities are not done. How do we discriminate that from not performing duties in the mode of ignorance?
I'm not sure I understand your question. That's my shortcoming, not yours.
No, in the mode of goodness, mode of ignorance, there is avoidance of certain kind of duties, of passionately getting forward, but just you said one thing is, you know, the mode of goodness is ma phaleshu kadachan. So ma phaleshu means there is no expectation of fruits.
Right.
And attached to the duty. And in the mode of ignorance also there is relatively no expectation of result.
I think I understand your question now. Well, inactivity in goodness is based on knowledge. And inactivity in ignorance is based on ignorance. Does that help? How do we know if we're in ignorance or goodness?
If I'm not doing some duty, is it because of knowledge or is it because of simply laziness? How do we...
Shastra? I mean, can you give an example? Like Maharaj is saying, concrete, but not too concrete. What do you want to think about it?
Sometimes the extra endeavor to go out to perform.
Over-endeavoring.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Now, that's a good example also, because we read in the Nectar of Instruction, Atyahara Prayasascha Prajalpa Niyamagraha. Prayas means over-endeavor, right? That's the right word? Yeah. So how do we know when something is an over-endeavor? Isn't that a question that sometimes we ask ourselves? Right? Because when do we know something is a bold new preaching initiative, or it's an over-endeavor that's going to put us in so much anxiety that we don't chant our rounds well, we give up our sadhana? I find that's not an easy thing to easily decide because we someone say, oh, you know, build a new temple, what an over endeavor, right? But then we say, oh, but the preaching, how many people will be helped by doing that? I find myself in my own life, I can often gauge that the difference I find in my own life between an over-endeavor and really just working hard for the mission is my level of consciousness at the end of the day. If I feel quite, you know, agitated or affected by material desires, there's a good chance prayas is coming to play. And if I feel enlivened to do my sadhana, to read, to chant, it's a good chance that I'm on the right track. And it also is tricky because Srila Prabhupada has said different things in different places. There are times that one devotee wrote a devotee, because if you, in the 70s, the book distribution fever was very high. And it was wonderful. But as everything, so many things that are wonderful, sometimes it has a downside, right? So, sometimes the competition got a little too intense. I can tell you one personal story that one time I was doing the Christmas marathon in, or now we call it the Prabhupada marathon, in London. And we were at Bury Place at that time? Soho Street, I can't remember. The temple in London. And all the Sankirtan devotees took prasadam together, and they used to feed us like kings. You know, there would be cakes and all kinds, you know, because we had to eat for the whole day, you know, this much prasadam, because we didn't get another chance till like 5 o'clock in the evening. So one devotee took prasadam very quickly and left early. You're wondering, why is he doing that? And what he did is he went to the shoe room and he tied all of our shoes in knots. So it would take us about a half hour to unknot it all. And he went out on Sangerton so that he could get a bigger score than everyone else. Sometimes it got a little too intense. So one time things got a little intense and a devotee wrote Srila Prabhupada. And in that letter, Prabhupada just kind of pacified them. Whether we're a big devotee or a small devotee, you know, don't be, just do whatever little service you can, but make sure you do it with devotion. Right? But then at other times he would say, he said, what is the use of you being an American if you can't do something big for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Right? And then he would kind of, then one time he gave the balance. He said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, He said, actually, in one sense, the goal is you sit down in Mayapur and chant Hare Krishna. But because you're so passionate, I've given you so many big, big projects so you can do devotional service to Krishna. So anyway, there's different, you know, like we said yesterday, different shlokas for different folks, you know, and we have to judge that. I do think sometimes we did over-endeavor and we did allow our, I mean, let's talk principles. Principles are we have to protect our devotional creeper. We have to hear and chant regularly. And at the same time, there are special emergencies. And we shouldn't, you know, be like, you know, kind of a pucker brow. No, I have to read 2 hours a day. No, but there's an emergency, you know. Just like the Chaitanya Charitamrita marathon, when Prabhupada was just say, these books are being published so slow. 15 volumes in 2 months. But, you know, it was ridiculous. The devotees were, you know, they would be painting one of the paintings and they'd fall asleep. So they would just kind of move him aside and bring another painter. Now you can imagine that. How many times in art how many times did Vincent van Gogh say, well, you know, I'm a little tired, could you please finish my art? You know, it's very individualistic artwork, right? You don't mess with artists and musicians. You know, certain people, you don't mess with their creativity. You get very upset. But during this, you know, they just say, okay, you can't finish, you go to take some rest, next person. And a number of those paintings in the early Chaitanya Charitamrita are done by 2 or 3 artists. So the spiritual master's order was there. So general instruction is avoid over-endeavor. And I find here it's very nice. You know, the devotees, they have the morning to really absorb themselves in hearing and chanting, and then it's a very nice balance. But sometimes Krishna wants us to make a little extra endeavor. I tell you though, the biggest trick is after the big endeavor is to go back to regulation. Because we used to find this all the time. We called it the post-Prabhupada marathon blues. Because we used to do four weeks of intense sankirtan. Usually the day before the Christmas Eve, we would go out 6 or 7 in the morning. Sometimes we would stay out till 4 in the morning. Around the clock, almost. You know, sometimes we'd fall, you know, they always fall asleep leaning on lampposts, you know, things like that. But then, you know, there was such a push, but then to get back into regulation in January was difficult. Some devotees had a lot of spiritual difficulty. So even if we do have to make some big, I'm not exactly answering your question, but I'm, you know, big endeavors, then go back to regulation is very, very important. Okay? I think someone else had a question. Yes, Prabhu? I think there's a microphone coming. Is that all right, Radha Gopinath? There you go.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Here you've spoken about people who are in the mode of passion and who are attached to the fruits of their activities, uh-huh, and people who are not attached to the fruit of activities. My question is, Prabhuji, what advice do you have for people who are attached to not doing activities? People who are in the mode of ignorance.
An alarm clock would be a good first start. Well, Prabhupada writes that the spiritual master takes the disciple from ignorance to passion to goodness. It's a progression. Our general instruction is that we cultivate the mode of goodness. We cultivate two things. Basically, sometimes Prabhupada would say we cultivate the mode of goodness, and naturally, of course, we also cultivate Krishna consciousness. It's very hard to spring from ignorance to transcendence. It's very hard to spring from passion to transcendence. It's much easier to spring from goodness to transcendence. So there's some simple things we can do in terms of even just externally taking bath regularly, keeping clean, being careful about our language. I was telling Devamrita Prabhu and Shamananda Prabhu, we were traveling in the car the other day. We were talking about Sriman Peter Burwash, who was a very, very nice devotee. And Prabhupada once spent 3.5 hours just with him in the room, telling him how to run a Krishna conscious business. How to run a Krishna conscious business. And one of the interesting things Prabhupada told him, do not allow any cursing. You do not curse, and no one else in the company should curse. Because he was the president, he was the CEO, he owns this company. It's called Peter Burwash International. So even watching our language, because a person is judged by their language. Uttama shloka gunana varnam. Krishna is a person who is glorified by choice words. And for Peter, it was very difficult. Before Peter was a tennis professional, he was a professional hockey player. And in hockey, every third word is a curse word. It's a very violent sport. Not field hockey, ice hockey. He's from Canada. But from that day, he was such a sincere devotee. From that day, he never used another curse word in his entire life. I mean, up until today. Prabhupada told them different things, interestingly, and just a little aside. He told them that you should fine your employees if they're late for a meeting. So he has a $50 fine if you're 1 minute late, a $100 fine if you're 2 minutes late, $150 fine, like that. No one's late for meetings in his company. Of course, if they're in a traffic jam, they can call ahead and say, I'm late, that's okay. But so he probably gave them different instructions like that. There's different in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. There's a list, I believe, 10 or 11 items that affect what modes of nature we are in. One of them is our speech. One is what we drink. Right? If you drink liquor, you're in one. If you drink lassi, it's different. Right? I hope I'm not making everyone too hungry. We'll end very soon. how we live, I'm a little guilty of this, but the environment that we work in, right? Some people have a desk that's just stacked with papers all over. But usually you find some of the most effective people, they just have one piece of paper on their desk, the rest of it's clean. They take care of that, they go to the next one. Right? So different, even external habits. And then, of course, all of our devotional habits. And that will help us. One of the most important ways is how we deal with one another. If we deal roughly with each other, we bark at each other. Right? But if we're very kind, we're a service attitude, especially towards devotees. So is that okay? All those things. You can read I forget which chapter it's in the 11th canto, there's 10 different, the time of day is mentioned, the kind of books that we read, right? If you read, if you go to the train station and read one of those passionate novels, Hollywood Wives or something like that, you're going to be in a certain consciousness, right? If you read something like Walden, which is about someone living in the countryside, or even there's a book that actually Sridhar Maharaj gave me called Tuesdays with Maury. I don't know if anyone's heard of that. It might bring you up to the mode. It was about a man who... a professor who is dying and his realizations. That may bring you to the mode of goodness. And if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, that'll... So many things. The people that we associate with, that perhaps is the most... In Portuguese, there's a saying, I don't know it in Portuguese, but it says, tell me who you hang out with, who you associate with, I'll tell you who you are. So these things affect our modes. Okay? There's other questions, but should I? It's late. You sure? One or two more? How many were? This is ridiculous. What? Only these? How many more questions are there? One, two, three, four, five. Prabhu, six questions. Hare Krishna. Prabhu. Well, why don't we just go around? Okay, no, go ahead, you first.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, you spoke about a person, a devotee being dependable.
Dependable, yes.
Dependable.
Yes.
And also taking responsibility.
Yes.
So would you think that any person who joins Krishna consciousness movement and takes Krishna consciousness very seriously and he's doing his very best every moment of his life, would you think that such a person is dependable, or only one who takes on some big projects and discharges them, he's dependable and responsible?
No, there's all kinds of different dependabilities. We need the pot washers to be dependable. We need the brahmacharis who come and mop the temple every morning to be dependable. We may have different capacities due to our guna and our karma, but the underlying thing should be a sense of dependability. And even, some people, we also have our natures. So our nature may be to start projects and not to maintain them. We're not very good maintainers, right? So then maybe our dependability will be to just go around, do a project for a year, then turn it over to someone who's a more grounded, dependable person. And then we go on to the next city and like that. So we may be a little chanchala, but we can become dependable even in that chanchala nature. You see? Like that. Is that all right? Prabhu? You broke your pinky? Yes.
Rikshana? Prabhuji, these karmis are taking responsibility for their family maintenance.
Yes.
But for devotees, there is family maintenance and also they want to spread Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
So that balance has to be maintained.
Yes.
So sometimes, some devotees, they are very passionate to spread the movement.
Yes.
And they may sometimes, like in their family responsibilities. So how we can maintain that balance?
We were talking about this at Mahaprabhu's place, right? Balance is one of the most difficult things, because the second you find balance, something happens to again tilt. The balance is an ongoing endeavor. It's not something that you do once. It's ongoing. And it's not easy. I was talking with His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj about one of his disciples who really wants to do service and is very attached to their service. But in doing that, they're neglecting their family. And so this person, so we were talking about what to do, and Maharaj concluded at this point in that person's life, because the family is devotees, especially. So at this point, this person should be told that Maharaj is saying, it will please me if this person takes care of their family nicely, even if they do less service, that being a mother is service, right? And especially, bring up our children in Krishna consciousness. Very, very important service, right? And if we're not there for our children, then don't be surprised if they become extremely rebellious later, But at the same, yes, we have, and especially if we've taken diksha, we have certain responsibilities now. We've taken vows of 16 rounds, etc. And so it is a difficult thing, but I can just give you a little something that I learned from a management book rather than from Shastra. But as much as possible, we try to connect. Instead of like trying to, in cricket, you have to go to this run back and forth from wicket to wicket or something. I don't know, right? And you get points for every time. It took me 15 years to figure out this game of cricket, by the way. Baseball I understood and, I grew up with it, but cricket. But anyway, right, you're kind of running hither and thither. But as much as possible, we try to see ways that we can connect things. Like, for example, maybe we have to exercise, just like Srila Prabhupada took his morning walk, right? So we should exercise, take care of our body. And we also have to spend time with our family. Well, maybe we should walk with our family. Right? Then they're exercising, you're exercising, you get a chance to spend some time with them. Isn't it? Right? We have to spend time with our family, so maybe we can come to the temple instead of Essel World or whatever. Right? So try to find way. They call it synergy. Try to find ways that you can, connect rather than see the disconnect. The Krishna Sambandha. Right? What's that verse? Niraharasya Dehinam? No. Krishna Sambandha. The definition of Yukta Vairagya. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya. So we see that Krishna Sambandha. So we see our family here and Krishna there. That is going to be hard. There's only 24 hours a day. But as much as possible, if we can try to bring them together, that's That's ideal. But, you know, everyone, you know, if we talked about other things, balance is a very specific thing. So therefore, we have a counseling system. We have individuals we can go to and say, well, how can I balance my particular situation? But we should know balance is not easy and it's necessary. Okay? All right, two down, four to go. So is anyone putting their hand up that wasn't up before? Anyway, the next...
Krishna Prabhuji.
Yes.
Like you told now that in the mode of goodness, we must work and we must not expect. Yeah. And then second, the mode of passion is like we must work and we must expect. Now, as we are, myself, student, yes. And my parents have sent me to college, and definitely we work and we study, then we expect our results from that.
Yes.
And also the world around us is, means they are also looking to our results only.
Ah. So did I cut you off or go ahead?
Yeah. Then in that means how to actually do the actions in that matter.
Okay. Well, I'm going to answer your question, also continue answering your question. We should make our other things that we have to do in this world our devotional offering to Krishna. In other words, we have our things that are directly Krishna conscious, called Sarup Siddhi Bhakti, if you want to know the technical term. And then we have all the other things we have to do in this world. So we should make all those other things that we have to do in this world our arpanam, our devotional offering. So now you're a devotee, so you should get 100% marks, maybe 99 to 100. Okay. And that's your offering to Krishna. That's not, as Maharaj was saying last night or yesterday morning, it's not for our own prestige. Right, but it's a service to Krishna, right? So yes, study hard, and remember Krishna, and get super excellent marks, and do that as a humble offering to Krishna. So take care of our family and offer our family to Krishna. Do whatever, and also our direct devotional service. Don't just offer artik and our mind is is it paneer sabji today, or whatever. But make that, make things our devotional offerings. Is that all right?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
I think it's late, but if you could tell something more on Jayananda, Prabhu.
I can tell you one story that I heard from Pragosh Prabhu. Just one story, a short one. And it would be much better, actually, if Pragosh Prabhu that's here, because I heard it from him, I believe, years and years ago. And so, therefore, I think he was involved in it. It's a much better story. But I'll tell it very briefly, that when he was arranging that Los Angeles Rath Yatra, he had to get permission from the city council. And there was one woman, a very kind of a heavy-set, black-bodied lady, who was dead against it. Dead against it. And she was blocking the whole permission. So, Jayananda Prabhu went to her house and brought her a cake. He was really into prasadam. Sometimes he would go to the brahmachari ashram and he would wake up devotee brahmacharis in the middle of the night, just tap them on the shoulder and stick a piece of burfi in their mouth. He would do things like that. He had so much faith in prasadam distribution. Anyway, so he brought her a cake. So the first time, she kind of took the cake and slammed the door or something like that. And then the next time she invited him in, took the cake. He did it three or four times. And finally by the end, he sat her down, they sat down and they talked. Finally, she was, she okayed the permission. So that was 1976. 1977, they came again to the city council for permission. And I believe it was, I think Prabhosh was one of the devotees who, anyway, some devotees went. Jayananda had already left this world. So they came and they asked for permission. And, this lady said, "Where's Johnny?" She called him Johnny and he used his Christian name. "Where's Johnny? Where's Johnny?" And the devotee said, "Oh, actually, he had leukemia and he left this world." And she just broke down crying. She said, "No, not Johnny. No, not my Johnny." And she was just crying. In front of the whole city council, she was just crying and crying. she, by his purity, she had become so attached to him in that short amount of time, by his purity of heart. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhuji, Mahafaleshwara Rajendra Krishna says that we shouldn't be attached to the results.
Yes.
So how does this detachment couple with the sense of responsibility? Because when we are preaching, we, to some extent, we have to be fruitive. So how does responsibility and detachment go together?
Did you say by preaching we have to be fruitive?
No, we will see where, plan strategies, where we will get the best preaching results. And because preaching arena is unlimited.
That's not fruitive though. Because we do our best and we leave the rest to Krishna. There has to be that Krishna value. The other thing that Maharaj was telling my wife and I the other day, that there's always going to be problems. There's always going to be obstacles. There has to be. In the last class, I read that letter from Prabhupada. I said, don't expect a utopia. He said, that's impersonalism, to expect a utopia. Expect that there's going to be disagreements amongst devotees. He said, because that means we're persons. If we were take away the personality, then we can get along with each other very well. But we wouldn't be persons. So we make our best endeavor, but we don't. But there is a difference. You know, we want the yes, we want the results. We want devotees to come. We want this. We want that. But if we make our best endeavor and there's not results, we don't get discouraged. We don't. As Prabhupada said, if I had become discouraged, there would be no ISKCON. Right? Because he would say, right? Sometimes he would say, there was no result, there was no result. I would be going to see when is the next Scindia steamship going back. And he could have easily gotten discouraged. But a devotee goes on. And, you know, like that time when they arranged that whole program. They rented a hall. I don't know if it wasn't Conway Hall, but it was some big hall. And two or three people came. There was more devotees. Like we used to say in America, sometimes at Mangalarti, there's more deities than devotees, you know. But there was more devotees than non-devotees at the program. And so the devotees apologized to Srila Prabhupada. Oh, Srila Prabhupada, you know, very sorry you had to come and waste your valuable time. And no one came. Prabhupada said, no one came? You did not see Narada Muni? You did not see Lord Shiva? They were enjoying the kirtan. So, we try our best, but you know, sometimes results aren't going to be there. So I don't think it's exactly, I don't think our preaching is exactly fruitive, because fruitive indicates that, like, almost like anxiety. You know, I gotta do this, or, you know, or something like that. But we don't act foolishly, we act intelligently, but there is the Krishna factor. As we used to say, that we used to call it the blue boy factor. You know, that, and, you know, Srila Prabhupada started many things that didn't work. Jhansi, just to name the first one. Right? Didn't work. You could say Krishna had his plan that he was to come to the West, but Jhansi didn't work. Right? And sometimes we try this and it doesn't work, and we try that. So our duty is to do our best and depend on Krishna. And of course, not act foolishly. Sometimes, you know, we do something foolish and then we blame it on Krishna. That's different. But if we make all of our sincere endeavor and do things right, and the results aren't there. As Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada said, selling diamonds is different than selling cucumbers. Well, that's stealing. But anyway, you know, he said, when we're selling, you don't expect. So is that, I just when you use that word fruitive, I kind of picked up on that. We don't exactly have a fruitive mentality in our preaching. If there was one sincere person here right now, we should have a Bhagavatam class. Right? Especially preaching Shastra. A devotee, a preacher is satisfied even if there's one sincere person. As Prabhupada did with, what was his name, Nelson? That first devotee who came? You remember his name? It's in the Lilamrita. It was just... Yeah. Is that his name? Yeah. So, you know, just one person? Okay. So sometimes our preaching is huge, like last night, so many people, and sometimes... Okay? All right. Mataji. For those of you who are staying and would much rather take prasadam, please don't go. I mean, I'm really sorry, but I'm just following Radha Gopinath's order, you know, and I feel bad.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Prabhuji, I'm sorry if I misunderstood what you said, but you said that if we have implicit faith in Krishna, then some of the duties that we have to perform on the materialistic level, like Shraddha, we need not do it if we have full faith that Krishna will take care of our ancestors and people who will come after us also, if we are fully surrendered. But then some devotees may take it in a very convenient way and stop performing all those activities, thinking that Krishna will take care, you know. Yeah. So at what point does one draw a line, and are these things really important? Should one do them or
well,
not
I did,
do them?
Actually, what I said, and it's my fault, not yours, my fault for not explaining myself properly, I didn't say we don't do that, but we do it in the right consciousness. And that is that our faith is in Krishna. And our understanding is these yajnas, this, that, actually, they're not necessary. Just the chanting of the holy name is necessary. But to satisfy our other family members, right, and to keep peace in the family, we may do things like that. But we don't have the faith is in Krishna, not just in the Shraddha ceremony. So that kind of only answers the first part of your question. The second part was really the essence of it was, when do we know when we do other things. Just like it says, Jagyai Sankirtan Prayer. Prayer means mainly, primarily by Sankirtan. So we do our little yajnas when we have initiations and this and that. But our main thing is, or as Srila Jiva Goswami says, when we're doing puja for the deities, it should always begin and end, and even in the middle there should be chanting. That's the essence even of the puja, even of the different articles that we, the chanting of the holy name has to accompany everything. So really, so we do these, like in a marriage ceremony, we do some like, it's actually, you know, really great in India, right? They have, marriage means like 7 days or whatever, you know, like, it seems to go on for eternity, right? Not so much ISKCON marriages, but, you know, they go on and on, but they, there's a good reason for that. It creates such a samskar, or it's supposed to anyway, that you guys are really married. You know, you're really married, you know. And, you know, you're not supposed to split up under any circumstance. Think of all those people who watched you take those vows. Right? Because all you really need is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Oh, sorry, you know, and I better not do that because you're all going to raise your hands and get loud. But, you know, all we really need is just chant Hare Krishna, you know, do you take this person for your end, just have some kirtan. And actually, that's fine. But we do these big things so they help create an impression in our consciousness. But ultimately, it's probably we just sit down in Mayapur, in Vrindavan, take out our beads, chant Hare Krishna, take some prasad. That's all the soul actually ultimately needs. And we also do sometimes other things for preaching. So we may understand I don't need all of this, but for my family's peace of mind and things, we may do these things. Is that okay? Does the Shraddh help the soul? It does what it's meant to do. It right? I mean, I'm not an expert. You know, I come from a very different culture. So I don't actually know much about the Shraddh ceremony. But Srila Prabhupada talks about, you know, how it does, doesn't it relieve someone from hell and or ghostly or things like that, right? Isn't that what he mentions? So it does have an effect, yes. But the same effect is much more easily done by taking shelter of Krishna. Is that all right? Okay, I think that's... So, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.